On today's episode of 23 is the Mic, we recap Game 7 between the Nuggets and the Clippers to set up the two conference finals that we have going for us in the NBA playoffs, and we'll also look at the Cubs and White Sox on their quest for a playoff spot as the baseball season winds down. We'll also have a brief preview of the Premier League this year and get into some more things regarding the sports world and what's going on. So, without further ado, let's get right into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome into 23's the Mic. I'm your host, Nadim, at NadimN22 on Instagram and at TheDreamN22 on Twitter. You can find us, the show's pages on Instagram and Twitter, at 23's the Mic for both platforms. A lot to get into today, so we're going to jump right into the sports. Last night, a shocking conclusion in Game 7 between the Denver Nuggets and the LA Clippers in the Western Conference semifinals. The Nuggets completely obliterate the Los Angeles Clippers, who were seen to be as favorites going into the series. Going into the playoffs, they were also seen to be as favorites, them and the Lakers, the top two teams, to win the championship. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George combined for 24 points between the two of them. Insane. Kawhi goes for 14, Paul George goes for 10. Paul George's struggle just continues in these playoffs. It's insane to see how far down he's come in this playoffs. He said he was going through some stuff earlier. I think it was in the last series against the Mavericks. This time, there's no excuse. I mean, you have everyone says hyped up to be the second best player in the world after LeBron, or even at LeBron's level, maybe the guy that's going to overtake LeBron. And he goes for 14 in a Game 7 after blowing a 3-1 series lead to Jokic, to Murray. Murray went off, had 40 points. Jokic had a triple-double, having 22 rebounds, 16 points, and 13 assists. This game was completely just done in the fourth quarter. The Clippers had no answer. None of their shots were falling. They looked terrible out there. This was probably the worst Game 7 performance I have ever seen in this magnitude, on this scale. And what's funny about it is that it completely overshadows the really good Eastern Conference final game that we saw, Game 1 between the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. Went into overtime. These two teams are basically polar opposites of what the Lakers and Clippers give you. The Lakers and Clippers give you star power at the top, but not much afterwards. Clearly, the Clippers' depth was so overrated, as they did not come to life at all. Montrezl Harrell led the Clippers with 20 points. In a Game 7 in which you are the favorite to win the finals, the championship. So, switching gears to that Heat and Celtics game, the Heat pull out the victory, 117-114, as I said, in overtime. These two teams are so evenly matched, and they have such a good chemistry between the team. It's not about one player or two players, and then everyone else gets second fiddle. Everyone has one superstar, but everyone has a role on this team. You have guys like Goran Dragic, who led the Heat in scoring yesterday with 29 points. You have Jimmy Butler, who's obviously their superstar. Jamison Crowder hitting clutch shots down the brink. And you have Bam Adebayo playing defense out of his mind with a crucial, critical block on Jason Tatum's dunk attempt in overtime, which was amazing. If you haven't seen that, definitely go check out that highlight. Jason Tatum did well, having 13 points, 14 rebounds, and 5 assists. Marcus Smart had a game with 26 points. Jaylen Brown added 17. Kemba even had 19. Kemba's has been struggling these playoffs a little more than he usually is, so he has to really find himself and find a rhythm, so that those struggles can end. But this series, at least as these games are, at that game one showed, I think this series is going to be great. If it can live up to that level of hype that game one had, this series is going to be great. And now we have the LA Lakers and the Denver Nuggets to look forward to. Here's the thing, like LA, they had Dame, they had the Rockets, and That was star power galore. With the Denver Nuggets, you're coming at them with a better full team effort, a more complete team with less star power. I think the Lakers get this done in six. I think they do, and I think once they do this, they're on their way to a finals win. That Western Conference series begins Friday. There's two off days for the Nuggets, while the Eastern Conference Finals Game 2 is on Thursday, so we're really looking forward to that and seeing what the Celtics can do, because the Celtics blew a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter. So they were managing that game pretty well and had it in hand and kind of let it slip by them. Jimmy Butler went off. Jameson Crowder hit some big shots at the end. Goran Dragic getting into the lane. So it's a great series, great games ahead, hopefully, and we'll be looking forward and paying close attention to those two series. The Chicago Cubs are rolling, winners of their last four in a row. This is the most impressive four-game win streak I can remember from the Cubs in the last 3 years. It started on Saturday night in Milwaukee. Jason Hayward with a clutch ninth inning, three-run home run off of Josh Hader of all people. I would say so far this year's MVP for the Cubs, and to everyone's surprise, has been Jason Hayward. On Sunday, Alec Mills pitches a five-strikeout no-hitter for the first no-hitter since the Jake Arrieta days. It was also the first no-hitter in Milwaukee from the Cubs pitching since the Carlos Zambrano no-hitter against the Astros in that neutral site game back in 2008. It's been a great start to the week as well, with two consecutive walk-off wins against the Cleveland Indians. Obviously, every game against the Indians means more just because of what happened in 2016. And It's great to see Javier Baez with a walk-off single last night. Cameron Maben had a walk-off hit by pitch the night before after Jeremy Jeffers blew a save with a Francisco Lindor two-run shot. But we look past that. You know, the bullpen woes are there. All of a sudden, we're seeing this emergence from Craig Kimbrel, the one that we've been wanting to see. His walk rate's down, his hit rate's down, and he's striking out more batters, and that's the Cubs, Craig Kimbrel that the Cubs wanted and paid for. Cameron Maben has been just a good solid guy. He's not blowing you away with any of his play, but with the Cubs he's hitting 300. He's running the base as well. He seems to be getting on well with the teammates, and last night he made a diving spectacular catch. But we're seeing consistency from Jason Hayward finally. We're seeing good play out of the outfielders. But the offense, the core four, Javi Baez, Wilson Contreras, Rizzo, Bryant, has not really stepped up as much as we'd like it to. Javi Baez is obviously having a down year. There is a considerable problem with Chris Bryant. David Ross moved Baez to the sixth spot in the lineup in order to mitigate the impact of his struggles that he's had at the plate. But what about Chris Bryant? He's getting more plate appearances than any player that's not named Ian Happ. And he has not been good at all. The strikeout rate that he has is completely terrible. The walk rate is bad. The power is just non-existent this year. And it really just makes me sad to see Chris Bryant as this like shell of himself right now. And it makes me angry to see that David Ross isn't changing him out of the lineup at all. You know, he's just expecting him to just fix himself within the last 10 days of the season. The Cubs' magic number is down to 8, so we'll see. Hopefully that'll peak back. John Lester had a great start yesterday, and it might have been his last outing at Wrigley Field, which is insane to see. But he does say he wants to be back next year. He says that it was an emotional night for him, but he thought about how it could be his last start, but not having fans there kind of ruined the moment for him, so I think he wants to be back next year. What's really startling is the fact that the Cubs have really relied on two players this season for the entirety of the season, both on the pitching side and on the hitting. You've seen a big reliance for the most part with Ian Happ. Jason Hayward has had good clutch hits this year, but Ian Happ has definitely been the most consistent player the Cubs have had all year. Schwarber struggles, Contreras struggles, Baez struggles, because Bryant struggles, you name it. These guys are struggling right now, and they really need to pick up the pace. And, you know, in the COVID 60-game year, you know, anything could happen. You look at what the White Sox are doing. Today, the White Sox clinched a playoff spot as the first AL team to clinch a playoff spot. The White Sox have the second best record in the bigs and the best record in the AL, which is insane to think about where we were last year at this time, that the White Sox have completely come from so far and gotten the top seed in the AL, basically. They have stars around already this year. All these young, talented potentials have really blossomed into these crazy good professionals. And they have, I think, 4 out of 5 of the top hit leaders in the AL. Tim Anderson is leading the league in BA. Jose Abreu is probably the top MVP candidate this year. Luis Robert is hitting well. Eloy Jimenez, former Cub, hitting well. I mean, all around, the White Sox just have studs. And we'll see what they do with their pitching in the playoffs, because I think that the offense has what it takes to carry this White Sox team into the prom. I think the White Sox can give the Dodgers a series. It's just depending on the pitching and the inexperience of the team. We'll see how that plays a factor into this new postseason playoff format. So, looking ahead to see what the Cubs have, I can't believe we just talked about White Sox for that long. The Cubs have a 4-game series against the Pirates next week. They have a weekend series against the Twins this weekend, and then they finish off at the White Sox next weekend to finish off this season. So we'll see how that goes. It'll be interesting to kind of track where the Cubs and White Sox go and how different they've come. I think the White Sox are kind of like the 2015 version of the Cubs this year. They're really good, and they're having a really big resurgence this year from, you know, not being good for the past like 15 years. But I do think that they might be a little ahead of their time. However, anything can happen this year especially, and they've been putting it on like crazy. They've been hot throughout. Even the games that they get down, like today, Josh Donaldson hits 2 home runs. Morale is high for the Twins. They're up 3-2. And then the White Sox come back with late clutch hitting. Eloy's hitting great. Luis Robert is hitting great. Jose Abreu, like I said, MVP candidate. Probably the top MVP candidate in the AL right now. So we'll see where they go. It'll depend on their pitching. But Chicago baseball is doing well right now. And I mean, the Cubs started off so hot, and we've seen them kind of fall gradually. But luckily, the NL Central is pretty bad. The Cubs are the only team in the NL Central with an above 500 record. So we'll see where that goes. And right now, switching gears to the Thursday night preview. Now picture this. Let's go back 2 years ago. Those chants are running rampant through Cleveland Stadium in Cleveland, Ohio, as the Browns have just taken down and come from behind 14 against the Jets. Baker Mayfield substituted for Tyrod Taylor in the second half of this game, right before halftime, I believe it was. You know, 23's the mic is just starting out. The world's so different 2 years ago, right? The Bears are great. We're champions of the NFC North, beating the Packers. And in just 2 short years, everything changes. The Bears aren't good anymore. Newman's med school. I moved to New York. And the Cleveland Browns are a dumpster fire of a mess. With all the potential, all the hype in the world, Baker Mayfield was supposed to take the NFL by storm, and did in his rookie year, tying the rookie record for touchdowns in a season with Peyton Manning. If he had had some more leash with Hugh Jackson, probably could have broken that record. But that is a story for 2 years ago. The story now is the emergence of Baker Mayfield. Where has he come? Last year was a complete and utter downfall. It was embarrassing, really, to see how far his play had regressed in the Freddie Kitchens system. He got Odell. He got Kareem Hunt. He has a plethora of weapons around him. But what was last year's excuse? It was Freddie Kitchens, and it was the offensive line. This year, you have a good offensive line. And now, Kevin Stefanski, who came over from Minnesota, who, I mean, these offensive pieces are supposed to be well into his rhythm. And what do we see in week one? Now, the thing about week one is they were facing a Baltimore Ravens team that was much better than them. Just off on paper, much better.
they were better on both sides of the ball, every side of the ball, really. Like, there isn't one thing that the Browns do. Maybe the running game is better in Cleveland. And even with the running game, you have Chubb fumbling, you have a non-commitment to the run game, you have a negative game strip, so you can't go straight to it. This week is huge for the Cleveland Browns. I mean, you're talking about a new regime that didn't draft Baker. This might be, if he loses this game, if he does not look good in this game, I don't think it's about losing. If he does not look good, like a formidable franchise quarterback in this game, I think we're talking about maybe him being on the hot seat. And what the problem is that when's the last time we saw Baker good in a game? It has been some time. He hasn't looked great in anything. He hasn't looked great on any side of the ball. He's not looked good. There isn't one thing that he's been doing in the last year that has been, all right, you can point to and say that's an elite quarterback right there, whether it's scrambling, whether it's making accurate throws, whether it's taking the pressure in the pocket, hanging in there. He's running around too much. He's not looking for his reads. And I think he's improvising too much. He's improvising way too much. And today's game could define the legacy of Baker Mayfield. It really could. On the flip side of the ball, you have the Cincinnati Bengals. And they're led by rookie quarterback Joe Burrow, who just put up the greatest quarterback season in the history of college football at LSU. An undefeated record, all the records throwing that you can ask for. He had a stellar year. Now, translating to the NFL, he looked good last year. Last week he looked good against the Chargers defense. This should be a cakewalk for Joe Burrow. If you saw how open the Ravens were last week that Lamar Jackson had to throw the ball to, all the receivers, tight ends, this Cleveland secondary is atrocious. Maybe their front seven is better. Joe Mixon might have his hands full in the running game, but Joe Burrow should be throwing darts all day. So I think definitely Joe Burrow is going to be putting the pressure on Baker, as well as all the fans, all the media already has. Everyone's been talking about the Baker and Odell connection. I don't think it's about that. Don't force the ball to Odell. Baker, just do what you have to do and get the stats up. Look good. Look efficient. Make sure your throws are on target and make sure your completion percentage is high. And I think if you do that, the Browns win this game. The Browns do have the better team. The Browns don't have the better defense. I think both defenses are equally bad, but I just think that this is the time for Baker to shine. I mean, it has to, because if it's not now, then when is it? What other teams are there in the league that have as bad of a defense as the Bengals that you're going to go and show that you've got it with? There isn't much. So if you're going to win a division, if you're going to win a playoff spot, if you're going to be a winning quarterback, if you're going to be a franchise quarterback, you have to win today against the Bengals. And I think in my heart of hearts, he gets it done. I mean, I've been a Baker guy since 2015 when he transferred from Texas Tech to the Oklahoma Sooners. He killed it for us at Oklahoma, and we'll see how it goes. So I think the final score in this game is going to be 27-21 Browns. Tonight also has the Eastern Conference Finals Game 2 between the Heat and the Celtics, so we'll be looking forward to seeing how that goes. Great games tonight. Really excited. Actually, I think it starts in a couple hours, so be sure to tune in to both of these games. We'll have a recap probably early next week. We'll have a recap of the NFL as well. Also on the docket, what to watch for this weekend. We have the Western Conference Finals that kick off tomorrow night, September 18th, Friday, between the Lakers and the Nuggets. It'll be time to see if the Nuggets can actually hand it to the Lakers and keep the momentum riding as they're currently on a three-game win streak. On Sunday, the Bears take on the Giants. This is a game for Mitch Trubisky to follow up a good performance, a good fourth quarter against the Lions, and just take on a bad team, beat bad teams, and show that the offense is capable. Also, what we're watching for is Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals against Washington's pretty good defense, at least against the Eagles. 8 sacks, 2 picks. So Washington has a formidable defense. They have 5 first-round picks on that defense. So we'll see how they do against Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals. Atlanta takes on Dallas, 2 high-powered offenses with liabilities on defense. That'll be fun to see. The Monday night game versus the New Orleans Saints and the Las Vegas Raiders. That'll also be a shootout game that we're looking forward to. And the game of the week from 23 is the Mic for the NFL Week 2 is going to be the New England Patriots at the Seattle Seahawks. That's a great matchup between Cam Newton and the Patriots, the new-look Patriots, taking on Russell Wilson and the vaunted Seattle Seahawks offense. So we'll see how those games go. We'll start doing picks next week and give some fantasy advice as well. But for now, tonight we have the Battle of Ohio. It'll be fun to see. And the Cubs taking on the Twins this weekend. We thank you, everybody, for tuning in to 23 is the Mic. Catch us on Instagram and Twitter at 23 is the Mic for any updates. And check out our polls and our content as well. We'll see you guys next week, hoping for a Cubs sweep and a Bears win and a recap of everything that happens in the NFL's Week 2 and the NBA playoffs. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Have a great weekend. Love you guys.